This show is for outdoor enthusiasts and explorers, conservationists and storytellers, wholeheartedly committed to blending our love for adventure with the protection of our beautiful wild world. Here, we engage in heartfelt conversations with like-minded folks from all walks of life, learning from their experiences and insights on how to more deeply appreciate and mindfully protect our shared outdoor spaces. I'm Madeline Anderson, alongside my co-host and husband Mark Anderson, and this is The Wild We Share.
In today's episode of The Wild We Share, we're joined by Yvonne Lau, the visionary behind Bewilder, whose mission is to enrich family life through outdoor experiences. We explore the emotional roller coaster entrepreneurship can be, our drive as humans to seek out and find connection, the way kids light up with wonder and awe when they're out in nature, and how the outdoors can help us learn about ourselves. Let's dive in. Hi, I'm Mark.
And I'm Madeline.
It's so great to have you here, Yvonne.
Hey, how's it going?
So tell us about your company and what you're up to.
Where to begin? So yeah, Bewilder is an outdoor education company. We're based in Los Angeles, and it didn't start there necessarily. It's actually been quite an evolution. So I'll start back at actually where I grew up, which was Washington State. And I only mention it because it is a very outdoorsy place, as many people know, but I was not remotely outdoorsy at all. And just being a Chinese American and my mom's side of the family were refugees from Cambodia's killing fields. So you can probably assume that the idea of sleeping outside or camping or hiking was not a priority for our family. But I did start to get into the outdoors when I was much older, 27 years old. And I think that really was the early seeds of what would eventually become Bewilder. I just became a huge convert like right away. So went from first backpacking trip in the Eastern Sierra to hiking the John Muir Trail to climbing Aconcagua in February of 2020, which is the tallest mountain outside of the Himalayas in Argentina. That expedition really moved me, and I just became utterly convinced that more people needed to experience or have a relationship with nature. And as someone who didn't grow up doing it, it just felt like I missed out, especially growing up in a place like Washington. So March, as we all know, 2020 was a very interesting time to start.
Wait, what happened?
The panini. Exactly. We've all kind of moved on as quickly as possible. But I still remember that time as just being, very uncertain. But Bewilder began as a newsletter. And we were creating, and when I say we, it's I was creating a bunch of itineraries and for that was really catered towards beginner campers and backpackers at the time. We were not focusing on families yet, but that eventually grew, I think partly because of the pandemic, into a pretty sizable audience. And then we eventually got into the REI Accelerator last year, and that really propelled us into the outdoor industry. And my background's in media and journalism. So I have about a decade of working at places like the Associated Press, Fox.com. I went to Stanford on a journalism fellowship. And so really transitioning into the outdoor industry still feels relatively new. I feel really grateful for that REI Accelerator. And coming out of it, we were thinking more about doing something like experiential retail. Like, how can we really meet people where they are and turn that in-store experience into something that looked a little bit more like Museum of Ice Cream or Meow Wolf? Turns out 2022 or even 2023 was a very difficult time to be raising millions of dollars with very little experience in experiential retail. And so we actually started out hosting these interactive events or experiential retail events that we called Bewilder Base Camp. And our first one was in October of 2022. And that was also the first time I decided that we wanted to just experiment with the family market and see how kids would respond to something like this. So we created a pop-up campground in a shopping center in Culver City, which is in LA. And it turned out kids just treated these tents that we had set up like castles. Like, it was so easy for them to get really excited about the idea of camping. And a lot of parents were shocked. They were shocked because if they had not gone camping with their kids before, they were suddenly seeing their kids like go nuts inside of a tent. And so at that moment, it was a little bit of like, wow, it was a learning lesson for me to be like, kids, I think, are actually going to be the best role models for us to get more people outside. Mm-hmm. And so in January of this year, we pivoted to families full time. Mm-hmm. Also coming off of the REI Accelerator, I started focusing on Bewilder full time. And yeah, I'm really pleased to say we have since been organizing more of these Bewilder-based camps. And we also started our own summer education program, working with a charter school in Los Angeles. And now we have an after-school program with that same charter school. So that's where Bewilder is at so far. Long answer for a very short question.
No, it's perfect.
No, it's okay. It sounds like you've had some big dreams, and because of whatever the circumstances, it's with COVID, with, you know, the raising money, challenging market, you focused in on providing these experiences for kids and families where they can really learn and grow, right?
Yeah, I think well said. I've had so many lessons that I've learned along the way about what it means to really bootstrap a business, but also just build a small business and be comfortable with that versus always constantly being kind of egged on or even pressuring myself to build like a bigger enterprise when I myself as a leader may not be fully ready to take it to that level. So happy to chat about all of the above.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. In the founder world, I mean, I'm there as a service provider. So a different kind of a beast on its own there. But yeah, there's always this narrative of like scale and grow and build. And it's like, okay, but sometimes you don't want to, or you don't want to right now, or like it just doesn't make sense for just a myriad of different reasons. So I love just in your story how you've really stayed true to like who you are and what you're seeing, right? So when you see that kids are, you know, excited about this, you're leaning into that, and so you're just listening, I feel like, to what is happening, you know, and what you're creating, which I just think is so cool. And people, I don't know, do that enough when they're first starting and creating things. So like, bravo on that front for sure. That's pretty cool.
I do have to say, I really appreciate you acknowledging, I think, where I'm sitting today.
Sure.
But if I were to be fully candid about like this past year or so, man, one, I could not have done it alone. I know exactly the conversations with certain mentors of mine that I'm really grateful to even call mentors. I just serendipitously met them along the entrepreneurial journey that kind of kept my head straight and my moral compass pointing north. I definitely was hardcore depressed last year, coming off of a breakup, as well as like trying to figure out what Bewilder looked like after plunging in full time. So it's been, quite a journey. I've spent thousands of dollars on a fundraising workshop thinking I was going to go down that VC back path. I exercised like several of like my connections and my network, also thinking that I would go down that path. And there's just like a lot of social anxiety, professional anxiety, personal anxiety that comes from feeling like you are a solo founder and you have to do whatever it takes in order to move the baby, which is your business, forward. And then when you tie your self-worth to that baby, it becomes a bit of a cluster. So yeah, I think I have learned a lot in terms of how to make the decisions that are not only right for the business. And yes, there are certain instincts that have driven me to make what you were talking about, like, oh, decide like, hey, families, there's an opportunity here. Maybe that's right. Maybe it's not. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of it had to be learned in a very hard way for me. And I would never assume that like this was all very linear. And yes, this, you know, there were no huge pitfalls along the way in which it got really dark and sad and lonely. And somehow we just ended up with like, oh, an after school program, all these really great things. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, actually, I would look back on it and say 20% was hard work, 80% was luck and timing, and happy to chat about that too.
Yeah, I really, really appreciate you diving in there because, it's so easy to just, you know, talk about and show the end, you know, and I know there's much more that will happen in down the line for you, but to show like, oh, the here and now, like that transformation we all hear about, but it's really the journey that is connective, that resonates, that people can actually see themselves in. And I mean, as you were talking, I was like, she's literally in my head. Mark and I have had this same sort of conversation on repeat for the past year, just looking at my own business and what I'm doing there. And I have a co-founder, and it's still incredibly lonely to be on this road sometimes. So definitely, it's so much easier sometimes to look back and say, oh, yep, that makes total sense. But when you're standing right in the middle of it, you're like, where am I? Where am I going? Why? What? And it gets a little dark and lonely. So I appreciate you sharing that. I know that takes something.
Now I want to draw a parallel to this, you know, the founder entrepreneur journey to the experience that you see that like families or kids have in the outdoors. Now, what is, given that you've kind of, you know, your comment earlier about like kids treating these tents like a castle, what do you think you've learned from how children embrace the outdoors that you want to take on for yourself?
Oh, so much. Well, one, like, I think the idea of just being a kid again, mm-hmm. in terms of like the ethos of being endlessly curious and endlessly courageous for the most part, because you don't really know what could go wrong. in many ways, ignorance is bliss. And so I see kids being incredibly present, very much in the moment. They aren't thinking about what happened 2 minutes ago, let alone thinking about what happens next. And so when they're there in a tent or otherwise, or at a park or whatever, I think there's something really beautiful about that mindset that we tend to lose as adults who kind of, you know, go through the grind, learn a lot of hard lessons and things like that. But I think what really struck me when we saw them at Boulder Base Camp was the awe. And that awe is usually what I find at the top of a mountain or even mm-hmm. on the climb on a mountain. But that's really hard. And their awe really came in stepping through a shopping center on the outside and like crossing over into a tent. Right. And then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, this is amazing. And their imagination just gets so activated. And I don't think it takes much, but it feels like sometimes as adults, it requires a lot of heavy lifting. Like, we need to go on vacation. We need to do this really adventurous thing. We need to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to just kind of like put us in the right environment to tap into that. But I think where I really appreciate working with kids and oftentimes learning from them by stepping into their shoes is how tactile their experiences are. They're still very much interested in feeling things and allowing those feelings to come through. Mm-hmm. And as a result, they're incredibly present and much more open to experiencing wonder and awe, which are the same feelings that I experience in nature. And oftentimes it's harder to tap into that when I'm in a room all day long in front of a, you know, in front of a computer or even at happy hour or at a restaurant. It's like, it takes so much more to exercise that muscle, mm-hmm. but I don't actually mm-hmm. think we need that much. It just requires a certain mindset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, one thing, you know, we have a 2.5-year-old, right? And she is, it's difficult for her to regulate her emotions.
Difficult to understand.
But the beauty in that is that while there might be some low lows, there's some really high highs, right? When that's what you just spoke of, the beauty and the awe and like just the excitement that kids can really just easily tap into, because it's like, you know, they're able to access emotions at a level that as adults we've been trained not to access.
To push down, to push away.
Or to push away or to temper. And so I love that you shared that what you saw and what you want to take on for yourself too, potentially is just this being able to tap into that awe and that joy and that wonder, like kids do.
It's so informative because I think where Bewilder is really starting to carve out a niche is that we're trying to bring the outdoors into urban places. Mm-hmm. So I've talked to you about like hiking the John Muir Trail, climbing Aconcagua in Argentina. Like these are all really far-flung places that most people will not be able to do. And so how do you like bottle up the essence of, I think, what nature can do, mm-hmm. and bring it into like a very highly dense urban environment? So when we talk about working with kids, I think that is the reminder of like, that's what we're aiming for. And then our job is to figure out how to get there with storytelling, with, you know, games, with art, whatever type of inspiration that I think will help families more broadly, like channel that energy, even when they're at a park or even when they're walking around their neighborhood. That's the challenge that I think keeps me going when it comes to Bewilder, because also I grew up as a very urban kid, mm-hmm. someone who's mm-hmm. like, I don't like camping. I think it's uncomfortable. I think it's dirty. My family doesn't like it. It's not what we do. We go to hotels and we go eat at restaurants. And that was my life for a really long time. So I totally understand why there's such a barrier to entry just from like a cultural and community standpoint. So how do we tap into someone's imagination and make people think about nature in a different perspective, and then use elements that are much more familiar to an urban lifestyle, art, entertainment, culture, to kind of generate an affinity for the outdoors without necessarily shipping them off to Yosemite or right. taking them into, you know, an epic section hike. I don't necessarily think that's necessary, but that's a test. Like, I think that's what we're trying to figure out.
Yeah. I think you touch on something so important there though, too. And something that maybe is why the idea, you know, for Bewilder took off during the pandemic specifically is just, I think we've just seen this shift in the last couple of years to people acknowledging and recognizing that outdoor recreation, outdoor activity does not have to be epic the way that we, I think, used to think of it as. It doesn't have to be climbing Everest or getting to base camp or anything like that, or doing the through hike or the section, you know. And so meeting people, what I really hear from you is like meeting people where they're at. Like right now, their feet are on the ground. They have maybe a yard or a park a couple blocks over. Like, what can they do where they're at and in that space? Because especially, I mean, we're a terrible example because we lived in Chicago for over a decade and then moved here to Colorado to be closer to the mountains. So like, we're not a good example of this clearly, but you know, when we were in Chicago, one of the things we really loved was the fact that there was, you know, nature there. You know, you had to,
The lakefront.
Oh yeah, the lakefront. You know, there's forest preserves, there's, you know, neighborhood parks, all sorts of things. You know, you don't have to go far really to find it, but you have to know that it exists and it's available to you, and it has to feel welcoming, which a lot of times, you know, it doesn't, or at least historically it hasn't. So I think you touch on a lot of really important things there.
Yeah, and LA is such a remarkable place to be building this type of business, quite frankly, because we have LA County Parks and Rec. They have dozens of really beautifully preserved parks. And of course, they're, you know, constantly under-resourced by their standards. Mm-hmm. But I actually also feel like it is a marketing challenge mm-hmm. most of the time. I don't know if families are totally aware of like how close their parks or neighborhood parks are, how beautiful they are. There's so much wildlife that exists within the city. Like, I can walk around my neighborhood in Cypress Park, which is near the LA River. And although the LA River is like a concrete pathway, the river itself has a lot of beautiful trees and oftentimes has herons and all types of birds that are just hanging out in the mornings as we're running or biking past them. I can go on a walk in my neighborhood and there are steps built into the hills, which you can climb to get a beautiful view of the city. We're talking about sunsets and sunrises. There's so many perches like that because LA is so mountainous. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've spotted owls and hawks kind of like all over, and it's not because I was looking for them. It was just a matter of taking a step outside and paying attention to it and looking for it. I mean, and being open to it, I would say.
Sure.
But yeah, our definition of outdoorsy is someone who enjoys feeling the sun on their face and the wind in their hair and likes looking at the stars. And I actually think LA not only has all those resources, but is remarkably diverse.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think it's been such a good source of inspiration and a role model, quite frankly, or an example of what other places could look like. Mm-hmm. But we also, you know, we're in California and the weather here is incredible. So yeah, I think this is where I choose wisely in terms of where you want to be based. This is our HQ, and I think I feel very lucky to be living here. And yes, not all families get to have that choice or have that access. But for an urban, like incredibly major metropolitan city, it's pretty great to have some of this stuff right out there. I think it's more of a question of still, it's like, would families prefer to go to Disneyland mm-hmm. or a camping trip? And I think the majority would still pick Disneyland. Would you rather go to a restaurant or picnic outside? And, you know, I think that's where some of these decisions are being made. And I think we can still move the needle, just exposing kids and parents, quite frankly, more to the idea of like, what does outdoor recreation look like mm-hmm. in a place like LA?
Yeah, definitely.
So it's like you're building a bridge for folks who would otherwise pick a Disney vacation to maybe consider more strongly going outdoors. Glamping.
Like, gets their toes into the concept of spending time in nature. Because you know what we've learned in doing user research with families is that parents are well aware, or at least the ones we've spoken to, that their kids enjoy camping the most because both parents are paying attention to them the entire time.
Interesting.
Yeah, they're
just the sheer, yeah, attention and focus that families get to experience together. That's the change of pace. That's what creates the connection and a sense of, yeah, community that I think sometimes kids and parents are craving. So I'm not necessarily saying you always have to be offline or disconnected when you're outside. You can enjoy the outdoors however you'd like, but that is one benefit that I don't know if families are fully aware. Like, unlike Disneyland where you're like constantly stimulated, it's like the lack of stimulation and the connectedness that you would feel towards each other is the advantage, is the experience that makes it a memorable one. So, yeah.
So one potential objection I could imagine people have to connecting is like, we're in a way conditioned to not connect these days, being on our phones, disengaged with something else that isn't your family. And it could be uncomfortable for people to actually, you know, be outside, be camping, like connect with their kids. Like, what's your reaction to that potential objection?
I actually disagree with the framing of that objection.
Okay.
I actually think that because of technology, it's accelerated and exacerbated our desire to connect. I think about last night, I was up at 3 a.m. and I was watching TikTok just
as you feel do.
Like I like yeah, as one does when they have like some, you know, trouble sleeping and want to get drowsy. But you think about where I'm looking at people's faces. I'm like looking at people's content. I'm looking at people's stories. Like mm-hmm. I want to feel like I'm not actually lying alone in my bed, but rather I'm being, you know, almost washed over with a bunch of people and their lives and their stories, even if it comes in like, you know, 60 second segments. And so I think a lot of people can relate to that. I think where it feels disconnected is when we move through the physical world and you're kind of like, oh, you know, Mark's looking at his phone, Yvonne's looking at hers, Madeline, you know, everyone's kind of down, looking downwards. But I think even the act alone is a desperate need to connect. And I would say, how we respond to that with families and like where they are today, I don't think it's about being Yeah, I don't think it's about removing technology from the experience. I think it's about how to balance that technological, how to balance that technological resource, mm-hmm. I guess, or like mm-hmm. our access to it with like more real life connection and experiences. I think, yeah, generally we are more connected than ever, and I think we want to continue to connect. But I do fear that actually more people are not necessarily interested in connecting with each other. They're not connected with themselves. Mm. That, I think, is what's being deprived of.
Yeah.
Is having like a clear sense of my own thoughts, my own ideas, my own ability to like learn some new skill and actually do it. I think what is symptomatic of this content media experience we're all being exposed to right now is that it's passive. Mm-hmm. I'm right. lying in bed, like, you know, almost being brainwashed by everything that I'm hearing and seeing. It takes a lot of willpower to be like, stop, put the phone down. What do I really think and believe? Mm-hmm. And so it's really, I think the scary part is actually just like knowing who we are in this kind of modern era and how much kids are going to be exposed to different ideas that will very much affect their real life emotions and sometimes guide their actions. But I think the reason I would try and argue for more time in nature is actually for more people to feel centered,
yeah.
to more for more people to have and cultivate their own values about what is important to them, to develop their own independent appreciation for the physical environment versus watching some cool outdoor influencer tell them mm-hmm. to. It's just so different from having an idea versus a real world experience still. And I think the benefit of the real world experience is that.
Yeah, I think I'm that totally resonates with me. I mean, I've had some of the best conversations both with myself and with others when I'm hiking a trail, right? And sometimes just having that chance to, you know, slow down, for lack of a better term, and just be able to look inward is something that we don't give ourselves nearly enough in sort of the go, go, go of our lives these days. And I think through the pandemic, just having that big old chunk of time away from other people really made a lot of folks crave that connection. And maybe that's, you know, they focused more on technology for that connection, or maybe coming out the other end, there's some more connection with others and family and friends, you know, to each their own that way. But yeah, I think so much of what you said took me back to just like where we are right now with, you know, having a 2.5-year-old toddler. Like, she is so very aware of the world. And, you know, sometimes this connection piece isn't necessarily quantity over quality, like flip that and reverse it, because the quality really matters. And sometimes it doesn't have to take long at all. But our daughter Cora, she's very recently, like, she does not want to go to bed. She doesn't want us to leave and say bye-bye at daycare. Like, she wants us there. And it's a connecting factor. Like, she wants that time to connect and for our attention to be on her, and hers on us. And so, you know, it's really easy to look at that and be just like, get annoyed. Oh my gosh, why won't you go to bed? Like, I'm exhausted. I want to go to bed, you know, or like, okay, I got to go get to work. So like, I got to drop you off at daycare. Bye. But, you know, when you take a step back and you look at what's actually under that and what is, you know, being called for, it's connection at its core. And yeah, I think to your point, I think it was a great point, like the outdoors and being outdoors, the rest of that evaporates, right? It goes away. Like, you're not connected. You know, there's, I don't know, a tent and a campsite and maybe a trail, you know? And so, yeah, it's like all that attention and focus can be kind of brought into one place and on maybe one or two people together. And that's, yeah, that's something we don't give ourselves very often in a lot of other ways in life. So yeah, that's such a great, great point. I think it's beautiful.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm glad it resonated.
Yeah, for sure. And I know I totally went off on a tangent there, but
but no, thanks for sharing your experience with Cora. I think that's really valid. And yeah. I think as parents, you know, we're all trying. I'm not a parent yet myself, But like from the conversations we've had with parents, it just seems like everyone's just trying their best.
Oh yeah.
Of course, like most parents want to do whatever they can in order to make sure that their kids are set up for life. But yeah, some of these trends are unstoppable. Like I would look at Apple Vision Pro when that was coming out as a commercial. I was like, that kind of looks amazing. I can like click things with my eyeballs. Yeah, why not? Like that seems easier. Forget my index finger. You know, I think technology is coming fast and there's like a lot of investment in it. It's obviously propelling that for all kinds of reasons. Mm-hmm. I do worry just about the state of our physical environment. Mm. That goes from not only like the environment in nature, but our roads, our public transportation, infrastructure. Like there's just like a lot of aspects of our physical world that could also use the same investment, if not more.
Sure. For sure.
Tell us about a little bit about the, you know, I think you said you started as like a newsletter or like a sharing content. Tell us a little bit. Is that still going on?
Yeah, it is. So we're on the precipice of announcing like a new content manager role who will be joining our team. Can't officially announce it quite yet, but that's just because the contract's not quite signed. Sure, but sure. I'm gonna tease it. But yeah, I think where we see a lot of potential for the itinerary specifically, but then I can also talk a little bit about more about Bewilder's strategy more broadly. The itineraries is just being much more focused around families and their needs. So day trips, for instance, makes a lot more sense versus like a 3-day camping trip, which is where I started with the newsletter. So what does a day trip around LA look like? Maybe within like a 1 to 2 hour drive radius. And then, you know, what does that look like in terms of the right gear that you'd want for a 0 to 5 year old and then a 6 to 12 year old and then 13 and up? I think having that type of delineation for our itineraries would be much more helpful than the way that they are today. And then I think more broadly for Bewilder, where we're really excited is also just reimagining what the outdoors can look like for urban residents. Like we kind of talked about this, but I think what that looks like is in really deepening the brand and making sure people associate that with Bewilder. Because I think if we can better build up that narrative, that brand has more potential to convert minds and hearts versus any particular program that we develop. Because even that, you know, is also like a finite amount of students that we're touching in our after school program. Whereas I think there are families outside of LA that could very much benefit from the perspective. And so still figuring out what that looks like from a company standpoint, but that's where we see the potential in this market with families and the outdoors is I think most people, as you were sharing, came out of the pandemic truly reevaluating what was important to them. And coincidentally or not, like time in the outdoors was pretty critical to even socializing with other people. And so I hope we don't lose that momentum as a culture. I know the outdoor industry has seen like a bit of a dip in terms of purchasing power, but I think as a culture, if we can still ride that and generate that into like more long-term action, that's something we want to be a part of in terms of that movement is just being like, let's not forget that when everything went south, nature was still there.
Yeah.
And I think it's less about also focusing for us on climate change and, you know, some of the more difficult issues that are happening like around the world and even locally, but rather framing it as something that's very much accessible, can be beneficial towards one's life if we take tiny steps versus feeling totally helpless or paralyzed with more systemic issues that are kind of outside of our scope. So yeah, I think that's been Bewilder's focus is just how do we really change the tone and the types of ideas that are being proliferated around outdoorsy? Like what does it mean to be outdoorsy? So yeah, we're going to really revamp our itineraries in the next couple of months. And then also just think more broadly of what it means to tell certain stories about what it means to be outdoorsy.
Yeah, that totally makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I love that refocus or that pivot. And yeah, there's been a lot of talk lately around what does outdoorsy mean and what can it mean. And so I love that you guys are entering that conversation.
We're trying. It takes some more time before we feel like, you know, we get to harvest the seeds that we're planting. But totally. Yeah, one day at a time, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And you are planting them. So I have full faith that they will bloom.
Well, there's like, it's exciting to hear you say all that. Like, to me, is like there are many, many, almost infinite ways to engage people in having them be interested in the power of the outdoors, or find new ways to tap into the outdoors that exist, right? So I think as you were, you know, sharing all that, I was in my head thinking, like, God, there's so many different things that Bewilder as a brand could do to share, to build that bridge for people who really want to get outside, or maybe who aren't aware of the benefits of being outside or what it could give them. And so it's really exciting to hear about all the ideas that you've already come up with, and then even new things as well.
I think what's so beautiful about the Bewilder Base Camps that we've done so far, we've done 5 this year, and each one is a huge lift.
Yeah.
And we hire like 20 people. We spend all day setting up and even less time actually operating it. But we are starting to see some regulars kind of come through.
Yes. Yep.
Some families that we've seen over and over again, some kids we've kind of like grown up with this past year together. And so that's been extremely heartwarming. And I think that's something we should be doing a better job at, is just regularly engaging with those families who have already exposed to the brand at the base camp level. But what does it mean to have like a regular touch point with them?
Yeah.
So that's where I do think content, stories, podcasts like these is always such an easy way from a family's perspective, just to engage, to hear, you know, how we're thinking about the world, what should they be getting excited about, what are some resources for them to access. So there's a lot of it we haven't figured out, but I think that's where I get most excited as a former journalist and storyteller. Like, it's cool. I think it's a really interesting time to be producing content. But I feel like this is such a fun niche to be focused on, because there are like already a lot of parents who are very inclined, but they may not necessarily have the time to be paying attention about like, oh, why, how, what should I be doing with my children that would be beneficial from just like an environmental standpoint of how I can introduce them to the outdoors, for instance. So we'll see. I think this is the challenge and the opportunity.
That's all right up my alley as well. As a storyteller myself, I could nerd out all day on that front. I think as parents, we come across this all the time. It's like we get to the weekends, and the weekends are time to like do something fun or whatever we think that might be. But you know, you're so busy, go, go, go throughout the entire week. You get to the weekend, you're like, wow, we didn't plan anything. I don't know what we're doing. We don't have a plan. And so it's like, when we can have, you know, any kind of resources, any kind of touch points that can help us to, you know, plan a little trip or a getaway or even just a like in-town adventure, anything like that, I think is just like super, super valuable to families and parents. And half the battle is not that you don't know or don't want to try some things. It's like just the time it takes to like plan something or research something. It's hard to carve it out and find it. You know, maybe we can stop scrolling the TikTok and the Instagram a couple minutes earlier or something, but
it feels so good. I can totally relate. I mean, even as adults, just like trying to lead our own lives is exhausting, let alone trying to do it for like 2 or 3, one or another little one. So yeah, we hear that across the board. And some seasons like Halloween, it feels like a no-brainer. There's just like tons of things to do, probably an overload.
Yeah.
But yeah, what happens in other times of the year beyond the holidays? And how can it be nurturing for our families and like create more connectedness?
Yeah.
I think that's where we're trying to focus on too.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I'm curious. I'm going to circle us back to sort of the beginning, or maybe your beginning with the outdoors. But I'm very curious, you know, obviously you're facilitating some of these first touch points for a lot of families, a lot of kids. And I know that your own experience with the outdoors came later than maybe some, maybe not most, though. What was it that like sparked your interest? What was that first, you know, trip you went on? What compels you to even say yes in the first place to that?
I think it was peer pressure in some ways. Yeah. I was living in San Francisco and everyone was outdoorsy. Like people like gone backpacking, a lot of people go hiking. And I just remember being like, oh, I guess I should try backpacking. I've done camping. And at that point, I really did not like camping. Like I remember very vividly freezing my butt off in Joshua Tree National Park, camping with a friend like probably 5 to 6 years before that time. And it was the desert, so I thought it would be warm. And if anyone knows anything about the desert, it gets very cold at night. And my sleeping bag was absolutely not warm enough. And so I remember coming out being like, camping sucks. And so I thought maybe I'd try backpacking. And I went to REI, got all my stuff. Turns out my housemate at the time has also never gone backpacking. And so we basically planned a trip to the Eastern Sierra. Have you two been to the Eastern Sierra?
We have not, no.
It is an underrated gem. And I think most people in San Francisco stop at Yosemite instead of driving over the Sierra and getting to the eastern side. So oftentimes it's much more of like an LA route. So for better or for worse, we drove like 6 hours to get to this particular backpacking destination. Wow. And it was Duck Lake near Mammoth Lakes in Inyo National Forest. It is stunning. It's, you know, we have, I think, an incredible mountain range in California. And it just can't be underestimated. And I just remember, I look at pictures of that trip and my backpack's overloaded. I'm not wearing any appropriate gear. Nothing's right in terms of like how I would do that trip today. But the one thing that needed to work out did, which was a gorgeous sunrise, a beautiful sunset, and realizing that, oh, my feet could take me here. I just didn't know that I could do that. And so the landscape itself was like so spectacular, and it was something that I'd never really seen before, and I didn't need much in order to access it. It was just right, like my first time backpacking, didn't really know what I was doing at all. And yet we found ourselves, you know, jumping into an alpine lake, you know, hooting and hollering doing it, seeing again like these incredible vistas. And kind of coming out of that experience feeling incredibly rejuvenated and excited. It's like, oh, what else is out here? Mm-hmm. I didn't want to leave. Mm-hmm. And that feeling actually still lingers every time I go out into the backcountry. It's just like this constant pull to like keep going, go back in. And once I did the JMT, I think like a year later after that first backpacking trip, I think that only further deepened my commitment and passion to nature. There was just, you know, we spent 2 weeks out there in the Eastern Sierra again, like hitting up like the most beautiful spots along that mountain range. And I came out looking at my phone, buzzing and beeping and receiving a bunch of notifications. And I just remember how foreign it felt. Like, oh, my life was so straightforward on the trail. It's like I wake up, I eat breakfast, I hike, I poop and pee, and then I eat, and then I sleep. And then I just do that over again, over and over again. And then along the way, you see some really cool stuff. Like you see like some incredible scenery that you never would have seen otherwise.
Right.
And then and then all of a sudden I'm getting like Facebook notifications and I'm like, why?
It's like, I don't want this. Was,
right. It was just, it gave me enough distance from my modern life to really appreciate what was not there, which was like all the outdoor access that I had from that section hike. And so at least that perspective shift just reminded me like, oh, there's like a totally different way of living that exists that I didn't have necessarily the curiosity or the courage to examine prior to that. We aren't like on rails. This is not a life that just hits go and then we just play it out all the way until we die. Actually, we can make so many decisions in between that can really carry us into different aspects of nature, different aspects of the world, different people, different communities. And I think it just took that experience to really shake it up for me.
Yeah.
And so since then, I just think, you know, we talked about being able to peer inward and like really hear ourselves. When you are hiking for that long, even with us hiking with a partner, you're just like the memories that end up filling your mind in a way that you're like, I have not thought about that in years.
Right.
It just percolates up again. And 100%. So that too is just like, oh, wow. I didn't even realize like my mind could enter like those spaces, and you can feel yourself kind of expanding a little because all of a sudden there's more quiet. There's just more time. You're not distracting yourself. I mean, it's still very beautiful, but you're not distracting yourself in the way like, oh, I have to respond to this email. Oh, I have to make it to this meeting. Oh, like I need to, you know, do a particular chore, et cetera. It's absolutely a luxury. Don't get me wrong, but I do think it's like a luxury worth investing in for that reason. So it was that JMT hike was like another pivot towards the outdoors that really solidified like my appreciation and my commitment to it. And then I would say like the summit at Aconcagua was like another big milestone too. Partly because it literally just made no sense for me to be on that mountain. Like it served zero purpose. It was not productive. I spent 2 weeks grueling up and down that mountain. It hurt. It was hard. Like, what? It was so irrational that it made it right. And the reason why I say that is because I think life is very irrational and we tend to try and rationalize it to create purpose and meaning. Mm-hmm. But when you embark on something irrational in an already irrational context, it actually creates a vessel for a lot more meaning because I chose it.
Right.
At the end of the day, right. I decided to do this and it served no other purpose than other than like filling my own cup.
Mm-hmm.
And owning the experience. And there's something so intentional about that, that I did not fully understand to like all the prior experiences. Trust me, when I was on that flight to Argentina, I literally asked myself so many times, like, why am I doing this? It's like, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of time. I don't know what I'm doing in my life. There's probably bigger, more important critical decisions that needed to be made than other than going on this mountaineering expedition. But I signed up for it. I did my best on it, and it will still stand to be like one of the most important experiences I've had in my life because it just served no other purpose than something that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you've created Bewilder as the bridge for people to have that same type of experience at some point.
This is why I like the name Bewilder, and pronunciation over Bewilder is because I think life should be bewildering. And I think it is. And I think if we can remember that and embrace that in the same way that kids don't understand why things work, like they're incredibly irrational creatures. Like, you know, you're trying to describe emotional regulation to them. Like, what? No, I'm having a temper tantrum right now because I feel like it.
Right.
Like that's just pure irrationality. And I think we lose that. And I think there's a benefit to like experiencing something that's bizarre and unconventional, weird and out of place and bewildering because it somehow, I think, centers us much more closer to the truth of what it means to be alive today than anything else. So yeah, that's like more of the philosophical underpinnings of where I'm at as an adult in this world. But also as a founder, I hope that slips into the way that we, you know, create these experiences. It doesn't make sense for a campground to be in a shopping center. It doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? For kids to like go camping on concrete. Mm. But trust me, when you see it, it does. When you like experience the joy and the smiles and the fact that kids can put themselves in that space, it makes a lot of sense. And that's simply because they have the imagination.
I love the way you speak about just your experiences outdoors and just your experiences even with the kids. I think there's just something really beautiful about it. And I know we have experienced those same, you know, emotions and feelings in different things that we've done. And I was thinking of one of the first backpacking trips we went on. We were in Patagonia. We were doing the O-Trek in Torres del Paine National Park. And it's like 8 days. We just like threw ourselves into this backpacking trip, just the two of us. Felt wholly unprepared once we got like boots on the ground. And then the last day, I just remember it was like, you know, we got up really early so that we could see sunrise at the towers. I don't know, we got up at like 3 a.m. hiking in the pitch black. We're like, what are we doing? I don't like, why are we doing this? We're exhausted. We're hiking in the dark. The last like 45 minutes, which was probably only like 3/4 of a trail of the trail of a mile. Yeah. Sorry. It was just like totally uphill over all these rocks and boulders. And I was so tired. And Mark's like, we're going to miss sunrise. And I'm like, just go on. I'll make it whenever I get there and it'll be what it'll be. It's like, I did make it, but
we made it like in under 10 minutes, I would say.
It was just so goofy. Like in the moment, we're like, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? And then to see that sunrise, we're like, oh, yeah, this was why. This was why we took like 2 planes and 3 buses and hiked for over a week.
Yep. The fact that you can retell that story in such vivid detail, I think just speaks to like how memorable those moments are,
yeah,
and are worth like recreating.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, yeah, so much about the outdoors has taught me that lesson over and over again. One, sometimes you don't catch that sunrise. Sometimes you fail on your face, and that's its own lesson. And it's super humbling. And it's like, oh yeah, nature's not letting me do this today. And I have to just surrender myself to it. That's definitely one takeaway, which has been very handy in entrepreneurship, let me tell you. I'm like, you can't always force a rock up a hill. Sometimes you just have to like, yeah, just watch that rock roll down and then meet it down there again. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, and then other moments, it's just like, you can't plan that. You can't plan the spectacular or the marvelous. You kind of just have to be open and ready for it. So there's so many takeaways that I think have just made me a much richer person. And I think when I'm outdoors, it feels much more immersive in terms of like, oh, these are the lessons that I should be learning. Whereas I think, yeah, I get really caught up in the convenience of door dashing, Ubering, and like doing things that are really easy, you know, if I have the privilege of doing it. And so those things, I think, make our lives easier, but I think they also don't have the same profound like life lessons,
yeah,
in terms of like how to exist and how to be in the world. Whereas I think adding some friction or creating these challenges or at least opting into them are just surprisingly powerful. Like they really linger in terms of their, in terms of the takeaways that one gets. And I think it just makes my life more rewarding.
Mm. Yeah. I'd agree.
What is one piece of advice you would give to people like contemplating being out in the outdoors and they don't consider themselves very outdoorsy?
I would just ask them to forget what they know about what it means to be outdoorsy and go watch a sunset on like the top of their hill or even from their backyard. It doesn't, you know, necessarily have to be anywhere epic, but if they could watch the sky change colors for a brief moment and feel something about that, I think that's what it means to be outdoorsy. It's just like that universal appreciation for the colors evolving in the sky, I think, brings us together around nature and makes us feel an appreciation for something other than our day-to-day lives and step outside of ourselves. And I think if they can do that, they can get a taste of like what we're talking about today.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that will encourage them to, you know, book that trip to Patagonia or do something a little bit more epic. But that feeling itself, it's transcendent. I think that's the goal. It's like, oh yeah, we're part of something bigger and totally insignificant. But either way, we are stepping outside of our own bodies, our own minds, and observing something, yeah, something far more spectacular than like our day to day. So that would be my encouragement, is just like, go watch the sunset, outdoors, carve 20, 30 minutes to watch the whole thing transition and tell me how you feel about it.
Ooh, I love that. And then how can people support you and Be Wilder?
That's a great question. Follow us on Instagram, subscribe to our newsletter, probably is going to be the most important thing. We'd just love to stay in touch. Feel free to email me if you have any ideas about where Be Wilder can be. We are doing outdoor education programs for students, but I think more than anything, we want to better serve families and create resources for them. So if you're a parent or friends of a parent and this conversation resonates with you, would love to get in touch. I don't know if it's appropriate to share my email on air or not.
We can
not,
put it on the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put in the show notes. Sure.
Please, please do. It's easy, yvonne@bewilder.camp. And would just encourage people to help us continue the conversation. I think very much what we want to do better job at is community building and finding folks who believe in what we're building, regardless of whether or not they're based in California.
Right.
We would eventually like to be everywhere, but for now, LA is our HQ, and maybe it'll be Colorado one day, who knows. But yeah, I think that would be really helpful. And yeah, I have to also give a shout out to our team, our after-school program instructors, the people that keep, you know, signing up to work at Be Wilder Base Camps. That cannot be understated enough. We're very much a people-powered business. We are, you know, ramping up our content marketing, but truly without those hearts and minds who also believe in Be Wilder's mission, there is no Be Wilder. I, as a solo founder, have like had to constantly remind myself to not only like delegate and share the load, but to also just trust. I think that's been one of my bigger learning lessons as a manager and a leader is, wow, when you can just let go of your baby and realize it's not only in good hands, but better hands.
Right.
And that's like a very proud moment to be like, oh, wow, I feel really grateful that people care enough to also continue shepherding like different sides of what we do, whether it's the instruction or the programming or the events, and just make it much more brilliant than anything I could have done. That's been a really important defining takeaway from this year, especially as we enter this after-school program and execute on it. So I feel really grateful to be where we're at. Haven't been like this happy and confident in a long time in terms of where the business is growing, but you know, you never know how things will evolve. So always trying to be ready for that too.
Well, there's always the outdoors where you can get recentered and and connect with yourself and have that sense of awe and wonder. So there's always that.
Yeah. And I think being able to recognize that those moments should be shared doesn't have to be like a solitary experience. Yeah. Like community is incredibly important.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah, it adds a whole nother layer of experience that I don't think I fully appreciated as someone who was very much like doing this with one other person or alone.
Right.
And being like, oh, actually the city version of that is often with family. Mm-hmm. It's with many people. It's with music. It's with food that's delicious, not just dehydrated backpacking meal. You know, I think being able to like redefine it for me in those ways has also been really transformative too.
Yeah. Oh, that's so great. Thank you so much for your time and for chatting with us and, you know, sharing your wisdom here. We really, really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity. This has been really fun.
Let us leave you with this. Think about a time out in nature when you were filled with wonder, joy, awe, or another memorable emotion. How can you share your experience of this moment with someone else today?
If you found value here today, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, leave a review, and share with your communities. Thanks for exploring the wild we share.